How many tons of ice do you think have disappeared from the surface of the Earth since 1994? I don't know what number you're thinking of right now, but I reckon you are short of the mark, unless the number that you immediately came up with was 28 trillion. That's 28 followed by 12 zeros. 28 trillion tons is the flabbergasting figure that a team of scientists from Leeds and Edinburgh Universities and Imperial College London have come up with to estimate the amount of ice lost from the Earth's surface between 1994 and 2017. And not only is there a lot of ice loss, but the rate of loss is accelerating rapidly. Now, we've known for some time about the ice melt that's occurring in Antarctica and Greenland. This is the first time that there's been a global measurement of ice loss. Professor Andy Shepherd is the director of the Centre for Polar Observation and Modelling at Leeds University, and he was part of the team whose study has just been published in the open access journal The Cryosphere. And he joins us on Sunday Extra Now. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. What exactly was your method for compiling this flabbergastingly large figure of 28 trillion tons?
So my team has worked with satellite measurements for a long time now of the polar regions, and that really is the best way to get a handle on how much ice is being lost. There's a great deal of ice distributed around the planet, far more than we can survey on foot. So we tend to rely on them now quite a lot, especially for mountain glaciers and the polar ice sheets. And we've published several individual studies in the past about how Greenland is changing, for instance, or how Antarctica. And what we did this time was took a look at all of the different estimates that people have made for different parts of Earth's cryosphere, that's the frozen planet, and added them all together. And we arrived at this number, which is quite large, as you've just said, and disappointing in equal measures.
Were you surprised by the figure?
Yeah, sure. It's a real surprise because we worked on individual components and we knew how much ice, for instance, Greenland was losing individually, but we'd never added it all up together. And in fact, the big surprise for us was that Earth is losing just as much ice from the land, which causes sea level rise, as it is from the ocean. And people might be familiar with ocean ice. That's the sea ice that floats either around Antarctica in the Southern Ocean and in the Arctic Ocean. And that keeps our planet cooler than it otherwise would be. So if it melts, it doesn't cause sea level rise, but it has a knock-on effect because our planet warms up a bit more.
Yeah, right. Your paper is divided into four categories, and you've sort of pointed to some of those now. There's mountain glaciers, ice sheets, Antarctic ice shelves, and the sea ice. I think you've just mentioned the sea ice. Can you run us through those other categories and give us your commentary on what's the significance of what you've observed from those?
Yeah, well, mountain glaciers, they're the really hardest part of the planet to monitor because there are just so many. There's over 200,000 mountain glaciers on Earth, and that number is rising because as climate change causes them to melt, they divide in two. They split into smaller glaciers, and so it's a moving target. And that's been the hardest one to monitor from space for a long time now. We do have powerful techniques now, thanks to NASA and the European Space Agency, who've launched satellite missions dedicated to look at small targets, and so we can get a better handle now. And they're losing a lot of ice. Today, they're probably the biggest contribution to sea level rise from the cryosphere. Now, they're set to be overtaken by Antarctica and Greenland in the near future because their contribution, the mountain glaciers, isn't increasing over time in the same way that it is from the polar ice sheets.
Right, right. So the ice sheets, that's the next category then. That's the Greenland and Antarctica that you're referring to, was it?
Yeah, sure. And they haven't lost as much ice over time individually as the mountain glaciers have, but they stand to lose a lot more in the future because the rate of ice loss has been increasing progressively over the past two or three decades.
Antarctica, can you give us a sense of how much it's increasing?
Yeah, I mean, Antarctica is losing five times as much ice as it was in the 1990s, and Greenland is losing six times as much ice as it was in the 1990s. And it's pretty much an exponential increase. And it's a real worry because although the levels of ice lost today might seem small to people in terms of sea level rise, Greenland gives up about 1 millimeter of sea level rise per year at the moment. If it continues to increase at an exponential rate, those numbers will be much larger in 10, 20, 30, 40 years' time.
Yeah, well, 2020 has certainly been the year where the average person's probably got a little bit more familiar with exponential growth because of COVID-19. So that's concerning to hear that the curve might apply on ice loss as well. So we've done mountain glaciers, ice sheets. You talked about sea ice earlier. What's the distinction with the Antarctic ice shelves?
Well, ice shelves are an interesting part of the cryosphere. They had been ignored, actually, for the first 50 years, really, of glaciological research as being quite irrelevant. They fringe Antarctica and around the continent. There are some huge ones, the Ross and the Ronnie ice shelves. They're continent size almost, certainly wow. Countryside, large countryside size ice shelves. And then there's some smaller ones at the Antarctic Peninsula. And we started to notice in the 1990s that some of these were breaking away, collapsing and drifting into the ocean. And that became a natural experiment for us because we actually saw then what would happen to the ice sheets afterwards. And in fact, the ice sheets, the glaciers on Antarctica that previously flowed into these ice shelves, they speeded up as soon as the ice shelves disappeared. So they were acting like a plug to keep the ice at bay.
We're speaking with Professor Andy Shepherd, Director of the Centre for Polar Observation and Modelling at Leeds University, and one of the co-authors of a new review article entitled Earth's Ice Imbalance. Andy, the paper refers to the global ice imbalance. What is that imbalance and why is it important?
So Earth is a pretty special place in terms of our solar system and the universe because we have water in frozen liquid and gas phase at any time of the year somewhere on the planet. And the frozen part of our planet is something that most people recognize and enjoy for winter sports, for instance, but mm-hmm. we do depend on it a great deal. And one of the fantastic things for a climate scientist is that ice and water change phase quite easily with small changes in temperature. And it's a really simple equation. As we heat our planet up, we're going to lose some ice. And it's really hard to change the amount of ice on Earth in any way other than warming the ice up. So what we see around the planet is ice loss. And in almost all cases, it's very, very clear that that ice loss is due to either rising ocean temperatures or rising air temperatures.
And 60% of the loss is in the Northern Hemisphere, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And there's a small imbalance between the amount of ice loss across the planet. And for sea level rise, that does matter, actually. So the ice...
Why is that?
Well, because the planet responds, there's a gravitational change. If you unload the Northern Hemisphere, there's a redistribution of the ocean mass to the Southern Hemisphere and vice versa. So if Greenland loses ice, you guys in Australia are going to get hit by the sea level rise more than us in Europe. Mm. And if Antarctica loses ice, it affects us more in Europe than it does you in Australia, which is a curiosity.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're obsessed with Greenland because it's the closest ice sheet to us. And I guess in Australia, people are more familiar with Antarctica.
And we should all be looking at the other end of the globe. Right, okay.
For sea level rise, for sure, yeah.
Fascinating. Now, obviously, the numbers that you've crunched are big and concerning. Andy, can you tell us how do they compare to, say, the scenarios predicted in the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, for the question of ice loss?
So, unfortunately, it's not a great situation. When the IPCC make estimates of ice loss, historical ice loss, and then they project it into the future, they tend to build best case, worst case, and mid-range scenarios. Mm. And unfortunately, the ice losses from Antarctica and Greenland, for sure, and some other parts of the cryosphere are tracking the worst case scenario. And that's a worry because it means that we can be confident that we're going to see more ice loss and therefore more sea level rise than people have been planning for. Certainly those people that are hoping for the best and also those people that are hoping for the mid-range. It also means that we have to invent a new worst-case scenario because we're tracking that already.
Right. So in terms of those implications for sea level rise, is it both the amount of the rise and the pace of it that are tracking negatively on based on your numbers?
Yeah, it's both of those things. And they affect people who we rely on for planning to mitigate for sea level rise quite a lot, because they cause people to have to rethink the size of the defences that they might build, and also the time when they need to be built. And we're moving into a territory now where the costs of climate change mitigation are very real to people who are looking at their budgets for the future. They might be 10, 20 or 30 years down the line now, whereas they were, you know, 30 years ago, they were 50 or more years away. Yeah. People don't think on those timescales. But now we're facing having to invest money to protect coastlines.
And just finally, Andy, the paper Earth's Ice Imbalance in the Cryosphere Open Access Journal is at the preprint stage. What's the process for peer review from here?
So this is a review article, and all of the individual estimates that were reporting have already been published and passed peer review.
Right.
It's true that this paper is a preprint stage and it needs to also pass peer review, but it's a slightly different process for a review article, because the underlying science isn't a question, it's the way it's just been brought together.
Okay, well, that's really great to clarify. And having crunched these massive numbers and produced these results, Andy, what's next for you in terms of your work doing the polar observations and modelling at Leeds University?
So one of the long-running challenges we have is to make sure that we have satellites in the sky to be able to monitor Earth's climate and how it's changing. And it takes decades to prepare and plan and launch a satellite mission. And we've been working and relying on missions over the past 20 or 30 years that were planned 30 or 40 years ago. We don't have a successor right now, as a polar mission for the cryosphere, either from Europe or from NASA. And that's the real challenge, is to make sure that we have a satellite in the sky in 10 years' time, or we'll lose this capability to be able to monitor these changes. And they're pretty severe changes. And so that's a real challenge for us.
Well, it sounds like all the spacecraft are heading off to Mars at the moment, but it seems like we need some satellites at least helping you to gauge these numbers, which are obviously important for the future of the planet. Andy Shepherd, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Professor Andy Shepherd, Director of the Centre for Polar Observation and Modelling at Leeds University. And he's one of the co-authors of a new review article called Earth's Imbalance in the open access journal, The Cryosphere.